Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. And I want to let you know this hour is going to be an interesting one. I saw this story come across. Why has law enforcement become the whipping boy for politicians? And I thought, oh, that's going to be an interesting topic. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, you see, has apologized for the stop and frisk policy. And you see other presidential candidates going out there blaming police, doing this. Politicians do it all the time. And to discuss, we're going to talk to an attorney, also a former law enforcement officer and authors of the books When Cops Kill and also Blue News. I want to thank our guest for this hour, Lance LaRusso. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate the time. Are you in New York?
No, I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. You know, we always have this discussion about policing in the city of St. Louis. It's a constant question. If you're listening to the news, we're even talking about police unions. We're talking about, it's constantly in the discussion here. And I wanted to ask you about that. Why law enforcement has become the whipping boy for politicians and the premise behind that. Can you give me some of your thoughts?
Sure. One of the reasons is that a lot of times they can't fight back. You know, law enforcement officers, like most public employees, are limited in what they can say, especially when they're in the role of a public servant. So you have people that will jump up and scream and holler, and law enforcement generally can't, you know, fight back and say anything. A lot of times you have police officials that are reluctant to speak out and say anything, either hoping things will die down or just not realizing that the situation is not just a flare-up, but it's part of a bigger movement. It's one of the reasons the book Blue News, all the profits go to law enforcement charities from that, and When Cops Kill, I wrote it to get law enforcement officers to understand that if they don't tell their story, someone else will.
Yeah. When they don't tell their story, someone else will. And a lot of times that narrative, it seems to be hijacked by people that don't live in that community. We saw this a lot here in St. Louis. So when there's some sort of story that gets up there, someone grabs it. They don't really care about the details of what happened. They just care about trying to shape it to their own bias and hatred or whatever it may be. And then they'll publish it. And next thing you know, national news is misreporting on what's more of an issue that's localized here. And this happened a lot in St. Louis. It happened in Ferguson. The national networks come in. CNN puts a giant banner up, you know, for all your writing needs, watch us. And it just goes to show you that as soon as it becomes less interesting for their viewers, they're out of here and they could care less about what actually goes on in this community. Over and over and over that happens. And it's probably not just a St. Louis thing. I know there's a lot of other communities that have to deal with that sort of thing. And it's not just the high-profile cases that people pay attention to. It seems just about everything is questioned, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's a bad thing when they take the stance of we don't really care what the facts are, or really we don't care what the individual details are of this story. All we care is we don't like how it happened or who did it in this case, and sometimes police defending themselves.
Yeah, the other problem you have, and it's a pattern that I've developed, and like you said, it's not just St. Louis or Ferguson, it's all over the United States. You have an officer-involved shooting or you have some use of force, and then you have the witnesses that come out, and half of them didn't see anything, and then you have people that speculate about what happened, and then you have people that are jumping on either for political purposes or financial gain, and then after a while, the truth comes out. And, you know, as I've said, you can either have a thorough investigation or you can have quick answers. You can't have both. And then when the truth actually comes out, just for example, it takes 6 to 8 weeks for a toxicology report to come back on someone to see what they were taking that altered their mind and made them make bad decisions or altered their abilities to injure someone, or like a law enforcement officer. When all those facts come out, then those folks that were screaming and hollering about police have two choices. They could either say, I was wrong, which is not in their vocabulary, or they can say the system's biased and the officers got the best of it and another officer got away with something. Over and over again, we find that when law enforcement officers use force, especially deadly force, they do so according to the law. They're highly trained. Across the United States, law enforcement officers are given thousands of hours of training. And we know that officers make about 12 to 13 million custodial arrests a year. They shoot and kill less than 1,000 people a year. And when we look at the number of assaults that take place against law enforcement and the number of people that could lawfully be shot that are not, the problem is not law enforcement. The problem is an ever-growing, dangerous group of people that are continually let out of prison when they should be removed from society.
It's such a great point, because we have that same problem here where we have a circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis. We also have attorneys in the county, but the way that this is, we can focus on at least St. Louis in this part. We find that there is some sort of understanding that we're too hard on people. We don't give them enough chances, or we're just going to give them the benefit of the doubt that the police were wrong. So they cycle them right back onto the street. And some of these cases we've seen here, it just infuriated me that, like here in St. Louis is particularly bad with the circuit attorney, Kim Gardner, where we'll have police officers that are on a exclusion list. So you can have a suspect that confesses to the crime, is caught red-handed with all of the evidence you would need to prosecute this, but they'll refuse to take it up because the circuit attorney doesn't like that officer and doesn't trust that officer. That's how bad it's gotten here.
Yeah, and that's happened in several cities in the United States. They call, some people call them Brady lists, where something's happened with the officer and they believe that they've decided they're not going to put the officer up on the stand. And in some places, they force the police department, the sheriff's department to fire them. And the bottom line is, when somebody's integrity is challenged on the stand, well, law enforcement officer or otherwise, they have an absolute right to defend themselves in front of a jury. And a lot of times they should just let the jury decide and stop deciding who's supposed to be a law enforcement officer and who shouldn't. That's not the role of a prosecutor.
Yeah, and you can, in these instances that we've seen here, literally red-handed with all of the drug evidence, and the person will have a confession and they'll still say, we're not going to take this case up. And we have such a drug problem here, just like a lot of other places have drug problems. We have a gang problem. We have a violence problem, people going out shooting other people for whatever dispute reasons. And the more you can remove those people, because they're just going to do harm to the community, the more you can remove them, the better. But then we have this instance where, well, we have to, we got to let them back in, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. And we find that we get a lot of repeat offenders over and over and over again committing these crimes. You're a former police officer. How long did you serve?
I was an officer for about 12 years, and then I went to law school at night, which I don't recommend. It's a whole lot easier to go during the day and quit your day job, but I managed to survive with the same wife. So it's
wow.
More than I can say for some of the other people in my law school class.
Wow, no kidding. So why did you decide to start a second career?
You know, law was always very fascinating to me. When I was in the police department, I was a trainer, and I did a lot of work with teaching different types of law, constitutional law, search and seizure. And it's just always been fascinating to me. And then when I got into law, I was able to work helping people who had been injured in criminal acts, and then helping law enforcement officers in a lot of different things, everything from the issues you're talking about, you know, not being treated fairly by the system, lack of due process, discipline. And to date, I've probably represented between 85 and 90 officers who've been involved in officer-involved shootings or critical incidents.
Wow. Yeah, I want to talk about some of these different things you've started to learn from the other side on the law side. Do you mind holding on after the break?
Oh, sure.
Perfect. He is the author of the book When Cops Kill and also Blue News. Lance LaRusso is joining us, former law enforcement officer. And in particular, we're looking at this topic, why has law enforcement become the whipping boy for politicians? Lance said if you wanted to ask him any questions, you can. So I guess we can open up the phone lines at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I don't know what you would ask them, but if you have any questions, maybe it's good. Ask a former law enforcement officer, ask someone that's now a lawyer, someone that is very involved when it comes to policing issues. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Our guest this hour, a former law enforcement officer, now a lawyer looking at it from the other side, and author of two books, When Cops Kill and Blue News. His name is Lance LaRusso. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad we're going to spend a little bit of time on this, too. How many, you said 12 years you were in law enforcement. What years did you serve?
Let's see. I got hired in 1988, mm-hmm. and somewhere around 97, 98 is when I stopped.
Okay.
And I was working with the solicitor's office as an investigator at the time, so I transitioned into prosecuting for a short period of time.
Oh, wow. In the Atlanta area?
Yes.
What, were you involved with the Olympics and the bombing there?
No, I was not. I was fortunate enough to go to Montana and shoot the Montana State IPSC Championships. So
you were out of town that week?
Seat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was out of town that week and probably had the best seat for the Olympics of any law enforcement officer.
Wow, how about that? Well, you know, when we look back at some of the way the industry has changed, and it's weird to think, you know, maybe talking about policing as an industry is not the right term for it, but you look at all the problems that we have here, and I'm just going to keep referring to St. Louis. They have such an issue with recruiting. They have a very difficult time finding people that want to be police officers today. And can you blame them? I mean, look at all the different pressures that are put onto it, and they're just basically set up with a target on their back anymore.
Yeah, you know, the past 2 weeks, I've worked to try to get officers their jobs back. And sometimes when I'm at those hearings, I really wonder, you know, thank God they do want the jobs back. The last one was in Little Rock, Arkansas. I traveled there to take care of something this past week. And the bottom line is we have officers that are just being beaten down, you know, and this rhetoric that people are coming up with, as we said, you know, they're just becoming the whipping post. It's actually costing officers their lives. They're being attacked. Last year, we had 53 officers who were killed in the line of duty. They were murdered in the line of duty. But we had 222 officers that were shot in the line of duty. We don't hear about that, and nobody tracks the number of officers who are injured and disabled in the line of duty. So it's getting to a point where, you know, we don't have the best and the brightest applying because they've decided it's not worth it. And as I told a reporter the other day, I said, you know, he didn't like law enforcement. And I said, well, if you don't like law enforcement now, wait until you see the second string when we're putting people in there that can't pass background checks.
Wow. They've already talked about loosening up the different thresholds that would be necessary to apply. You know, I want to talk.
That's never a good solution. I mean, the bottom line is when you're in your house and you've got somebody coming through the door, or you're in a building and an active shooter is coming through, you want the best and the brightest and the most dedicated. You don't want the second string.
Yeah. You know what I think's dangerous, too, is this sort of public opinion they try to sway, that if a police officer around, they're going to be your enemy automatically. And they put this thought and this mentality together that's nonsense. And that's doing a huge disservice for people in communities.
Well, a lot of times what happens, we have, you know, a video comes out, and video cameras have cleared so many officers, but we have video cameras come out, and people look at the camera and they say, well, you know, that looks excessive. The bottom line is lawful force will never look good on video. It doesn't matter how much it's justified, especially you add to that the absolute lack of knowledge people have about the use of deadly force and what's legal and what isn't. I've had conversations with crime reporters who this is what they cover, and they're asking me, well, you know, how can an officer legally shoot someone in the back? Well, this is not a Gene Kelly movie. This is not something like High Noon. We have, first of all, bad guys don't stand still when they're being shot at. Mm-hmm. We teach officers not to stand still when they're being shot at. So it's ridiculous to think that you're going to have officers shooting people and the bullets are going to go perpendicular into their chest. And then when we actually look at the law, there's nothing in the law that says an officer cannot use deadly force when somebody is running away. There's a Supreme Court case on it, Garner versus Tennessee. An officer can use deadly force to stop a fleeing felon. But then we also look at a principle, just the mechanics of the use of force are so, people are so ignorant of them. A person can point a gun at an officer and be a deadly threat and present only one target to the officer, that being their back. So you can lawfully have people shot in the back and in the side when they're pointing a gun directly at an officer.
What do you think's changed, too, in the decision-making in an officer's mind based on the atmosphere that we have today? Because I'm guessing a lot of officers are thinking to themselves, you know, this may be justified, and I may need this in order to to save my life or my livelihood, or the people around me. It could be a dangerous situation. But in the back of their mind, they're thinking to themselves, well, great, what if someone tries to accuse me of this and it's going to be game over for me? Maybe it's better for me to just let this guy with the gun run away than it is to enforce the law. So can you talk about the decision-making that some of these officers may be going through in today's society?
You know, it's a tough challenge for them. And in some communities, quite frankly, it's amazing that they come to work. Mm-hmm. It really is when they know that they're going to be persecuted if they make a split-second decision that's going to be questioned for months and years. And we have seen situations where officers have been railroaded, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. and ultimately found to have been not guilty of doing anything other than their jobs. You know, one of the most famous examples is Officer Betty Shelby in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who shot someone that was on PCP, and the reasonable belief she had was that he was on PCP. And see, people said, how would she know that? Well, she's a DRE. She's a drug recognition expert. That's what she trained to do over months. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a situation in that case where the suspect gave her every indication he was reaching for a weapon. Mm-hmm. Well, she was actually prosecuted and acquitted. But the amount of publicity that takes place of the acquittal never will equal, and this I talk about this in Blue News, and as I said, all the profits go to law enforcement charities. We donated about $27,000 already from these books.
Great.
But, you know, the officer being cleared almost never makes the news because they've moved on to something else. I represented an officer in a shooting a few years ago. It made international news. And when he was completely cleared by everyone, it made one paragraph in the local newspaper, and that's it.
You know, and the thing with social media is that they're going to put up these lies immediately, and people run with that. And people will share it, and people will regurgitate the lies over and over again. And the thing is, it has nothing factual with anything that happened in the case. But, you know, 2 days or 3 days pass, and that's the impression that's going to be left in people's minds. It's never corrected. And there's really no thirst for the truth in situations like that to begin with. So it's always a dangerous situation to begin with.
I talk about this and go ahead.
We have you for the full hour. We do have a phone call. You want to take one?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. Let me bring Don up, who's calling in real quick. Hello, Don.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. And you're on with Lance. You want to ask him a question?
Yes, I have a bunch of them. But my first question is, why isn't the public informed that they have to follow the demands of the law enforcement officer, even if they are wrong, to the point that they fear for their life? And that's only when they can go against them. I don't think the public knows that.
Say that again, Don. So when it comes to listening to the orders of a police officer?
Yes. If you're out here and you and the police disagree or whatever, he can be wrong. But the law here in Missouri says you have to follow his command until you fear for your life. So we know that we aren't dealing with any perfect people.
Right.
But I don't think the public in general knows that that's what they have to do.
Have to listen to a police officer, yeah. All right, so do you have a question or is it just more you're looking for his comments on that?
Well, I like his comments on it, but the other situation is in the police system, you have different groups of police that will get out and have some say-so or be the defense for police officers. Here in St. Louis, there's a divide.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
you won't find too many African-Americans that are going to be the head of the police that are going to contest or get out of law enforcement and represent police officers regardless of color.
Hmm.
You're going to have the African-Americans feel like they have somebody that will represent them, and the other guy's going to be a cop. He's going to get out of it. He's going to represent basically those that are not African-American.
Hmm.
Why?
Okay. Hey, Don, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, Lance, any thoughts to what Don brought up?
Well, so far as obeying the laws of the orders of a law enforcement officer, that's the way the system works. You know, when an officer pulls you over, you don't know why they pulled you over. You know, we're seeing this constant, tell me why you pulled me over and then I'll show you my driver's license. That's not the law. That's not the way the law works.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your supervisor out here because I think you stopped me illegally. You don't know if you fit the description of an armed robber. You could fit the description of a burglar or a domestic violence perpetrator. And when you don't comply, all you do is raise the suspicion of a reasonable officer because you're acting differently than all the other law-abiding people they've stopped. Mm-hmm. I've been stopped in cases of mistaken identity. It's happened to me several times. I've had guns pointed at me by law enforcement because they thought I fit the description of somebody who had shot at them before. So I'm speaking from the perspective of somebody that was under the gun very much. And when they told me to show them my hands, I didn't say, hey, I'm a retired officer. Hey, I'm the lawyer for the FOP. You know what I did? I put my hands up because I didn't want to get shot. They know why they stopped me.
And a lot of times when you look at the officer's own safety, there's a reason why they may be reaching or for a weapon, or they may have to have it present, because if it is a dangerous situation, they don't want to go into it knowing that in a split second, a gun may be pointed at them. And that's it's very important to point out, they're just not doing it for the fun of they like to hold on to the thing. You know, they feel like, you know, it's like the old black and white TV shows where they're, you know, like the gunslingers are swinging the guns on their fingers because it feels good. They act like police are going around just because of that reason. There's probably a really good reason why they feel there may be harm present, or there may be someone that wants to harm them. So it's very important. That's why you stay relaxed and you listen to what the officer has to say, and you don't pose a threat. And guess what happens? If you don't pose a threat, you're not a threat. And then things de-escalate. And you don't have to worry about it.
Well, it's interesting you talk about escalation, and I wrote an article about this. The bottom line, when people talk about de-escalation requires the cooperation of two people, the officer and the person they're dealing with. And if the person they're dealing with does not de-escalate the situation and does not allow the officer to de-escalate the situation, then it won't de-escalate. Yeah. The officer can de-escalate all they want, but if there's no cooperation, it's not going to resolve.
Yeah, and sometimes the de-escalation could be a literal 15 seconds of them coming to your window and saying, can I see your identification? You'd say, okay, I'm just going to reach for it here. And then all of a sudden, things start to de-escalate immediately, as opposed to being someone that would be considered a threat. Lance, we got a bunch of other calls on the line. Do you mind holding on? We can take some right after the break.
No, sounds great.
Good. Okay, so Gary and Gene, hold on, and I see a few more calling in now at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Lance LaRusso's joining us. He has two books out called When Cops Killed, the other one, Blue News, a former law enforcement officer, a lawyer now. We'll get some of his answers to your questions coming up on Overnight America KMOX.
KMOX Sports is on the road and covering the Cardinals at the 2019 Major League Baseball Winter Meetings in San Diego. All this week, Chris Raby and Mike Claiborne will bring you all the news you need to know about your St. Louis Cardinals with reports mornings and afternoons. Sponsored by Goodwill. The 2019 Major League Baseball Winter Meetings. We've got it covered on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
We're joined with former law enforcement officer and now a lawyer and an author, When Cops Kill, and also Blue News, Lance LaRusso. Thank you again for sticking around this hour, Lance.
Well, this is great.
I want to go back and just go through a couple of people that have been waiting on the phone line. A few people called in and left some comments. Maybe I'll go through those in a little bit. But I want to get to Gary, who's been holding on. Thanks for hanging around, Gary. What's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing this evening?
Good.
I just have a question for you. There's a lot of articles that have been coming out lately through the Riverfront Times and Post-Dispatch about law enforcement officers and their white supremacist social media. And I'm sure you guys have heard about that, you know, which kind of brings me back to the days before social media. Like when you served from 88 to 97, you said, right?
Yep, right around there.
Okay, so you had Mark Furman, who came out with Furman tapes. The guy was, you know, talk like a Nazi on there. So those guys, my question to you is, your 9 years, have you ever come across any unlawful police officers with that type of mentality? And if so, what did you do to prevent that?
Okay, Gary, thank you very much for your call. All right, Lance. Well, and there's a local issue here, too. A couple of police officers were let go for some social media posts. And yes, that's an interesting topic. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's a group that's going around that is mining data for that. And the question is, when they're mining for it, my question is, what are they considering white supremacists? Obviously, if somebody has views that are anti any group to a point where it's believed that they would be biased against them, then they probably shouldn't be in law enforcement. You know, I never saw that type of thing when I was in law enforcement and I policed in the South. I just didn't see it. But we talk about officers doing something wrong, doing something illegal, you know, as I told someone the other day on an interview, I said, you know, I've seen bad cops, but I've never seen one arrested by a journalist. They're always arrested by other law enforcement officers.
Hmm. That's interesting. And, you know, the what's relative to white supremacy, as in, is, you know, an officer on his own time wearing a, you know, Make America Great Again hat, by some people, they would look at that and say that's a white supremacist, you know. So it also depends if these certain groups have an agenda that they're trying to follow through on, if they're just kind of scanning the internet, waiting and looking for something to get upset about. It always depends, too, because, you know, you get a loud crowd online that'll get upset about something. You may look at what they said and say, it may be questionable at best, but, you know, a lot of officers lose their jobs over that.
Yeah, and as we talked about at the beginning of the hour, we talked about officers having a limited ability to fight back, but they do have a First Amendment right. They can say what they want to say when they're off duty and when they're not representing the department. They can have their own beliefs. And, you know, here's a shock. Some of their beliefs will probably disagree with some of the people that they police. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they can't be fair. It doesn't mean they can't be impartial. It doesn't mean they can't be great cops. And on both sides of the issue, whether you're talking about groups that advocate for the murder of police officers, you'll have folks that are sympathetic to that, and they're government workers, not necessarily law enforcement, but they're government workers. Well, should we allow those people to work on police cars? Should we allow somebody who advocates for law enforcement officers to be murdered in the streets to work in the tax commissioner's office? I mean, how far are we going to go with this?
Let's go to Gene, who's calling in from St. Louis. Hi, Gene.
Yes, hello. I'm calling to make a comment. And the comment is regarding trust the police. They should stop the statement. The media has really damaged and polluted the police officers by we need to do the police need to present themselves so we can trust them more. The basic rule is that we trust the police because that's the only person that we could call when we need trouble. And I think that it's a statement that they should stop it because it's not good. It doesn't have that much substance to it. And it puts a bad image on the policeman. And I don't know how they can stop it, but the media, they need to stop that. Trust, you know, we need to trust the police more. The policemen are fine. I am a proud graduate of the Police Citizen Academy in the city of St. Louis, and I learned a lot, and I've always been a respectable citizen because I'm from old school. When a policeman stop you, you just be quiet and you be polite, and if you're polite, you will get off. I used to tell my sons that when a policeman stops, say, yes, sir, no, sir, I'm sorry, it was my fault. You get off easy. But a smart mouth would get you in trouble. Mm. We need more people to respect the police.
Mm. Thank you, Gene.
And you, okay, and another thing. Now, this is back in the 60s. When our lawyers would bring cases to court, they would always use the expression, oh, this person came from a poor environment. This person is poor. The judges, they stopped that. Do not bring somebody into court and identify them as being poor. They're from a bad environment. That's why they did that. So here in the city of St. Louis, anyone could do the research or call in. Lawyers had to stop using that expression when they went in certain judges' chambers.
Hmm. Okay. Hey, Gene, good to hear from you. Thank you for calling
okay.
in.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. You know, and Lance, it's interesting. Someone called in Rhea and left a note with the producer saying something that she just mentioned, which is she was just pulled over. And she was polite, and the police officer let her off with a warning. And, you know, that's something, it goes to show you, there's a few things in the way you interact with police officers, if it's a traffic stop or anything else. Being polite and, you know, just being compliant in the sense that, you know, if they ask you for your license and registration, and you do that without putting up a fight, there's a lot that goes to getting off with a warning. It seems like a lot of people would agree that that happens all the time.
Yeah, the other thing that she brought up, the Citizens Police Academies are fantastic. You know, people, I used to teach in the one in my department. When we would go in, and it was amazing what people would learn when they started really getting in and understanding what law enforcement officers train to do and how they deal with situations. And it's interesting when we put whether it's Citizens Police Academy, or we put community activists, or we put anti-police people, media folks into a shoot, don't shoot scenario, they shoot everybody.
Oh, they shoot, man.
People asking them for directions, people taking out their wallets, people coming too close to them, people that say they want to fight. And, you know, usually at the end, they're like, wow, you know, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be.
Always is. The impression, though, on social media is that they're always wrong. And they're, you know, and Lance, I want to hold you over for one more segment, if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. And when we come back, let's talk about that social media aspect, because I talk about it in When Cops Kill. I think it's important.
All right, let's do that. Lance LaRusso is joining us for one more segment coming up. If you have any other questions, or maybe you don't want to actually get on the air, but you still have a question, you can text us. Text 314-436-7900. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX.
You know, joining us for one more segment, Lance LaRusso, a former law enforcement officer and author of the books When Cops Kill and Blue News. You know, if Lance, people wanted to check you out online or check out your books, where can they go?
They can go to BlueLineLawyer.com, BlueLineLawyer.com, or LanceLaRussoBooks.com. As a matter of fact, I have my first full-length novel being released January 9th. It's called Hunting of Men. And it's about a cold case involving the murder of a law enforcement officer.
Oh, how about that? Well, check it out online. What's the website one more time?
BlueLineLawyer.com or LanceLaRussoBooks.com.
Cool. Now, you wanted to talk more about social media and the effects that we've seen from that, maybe public opinion, falsehoods being spread very quickly. And that happens so often. Anytime there's anything regarding a police officer, it seems like social media is just flooded with a bunch of false things, and it's purposely put out there. You know, it's meant to be false. What are some of your thoughts on how social media plays a factor in today's law enforcement?
Well, talking about both sides of it, and When Cops Kill, I talked about the formal media, which is the professional news sources, and people get frustrated at them, but generally they're trying to get it right. They're just really dealing with deadlines, and it's difficult sometimes for them to vet information as well as we would want them to, because they're all in competition with each other. But really the problem is the informal media, which is the comment sections to the professional news sources, but also the blogs and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And the problem is those are mainly unregulated. So we have a story that'll get out there and it'll grow legs, as they say in the media industry. And by the time you get a chance to get the truth out, it's permeated. And I'll give you an example that I know is near and dear to the hearts of people in St. Louis. You can grab 100 people on the street and ask them how many times Michael Brown was shot in the back, and you'll get a number. Michael Brown wasn't shot in the back.
Right.
The DOJ report was very clear. He wasn't shot with his hands up either. So that information, disinformation, misinformation, depending on the motivations of the people putting it out, has permeated so much, and the blogs that are out there are absolutely not only unregulated, but some of them are absolutely terrible, the stuff that they've advocated. I mean, we have people chanting, what do we want, dead cops, when do we want it now? And you can go on YouTube and you can watch that. The other side of that, though, as I talk about in Blue News, is law enforcement needs to be using those techniques of getting their story out on social media. And I worked in government for a long time. The best part about social media for the government is it's free. Mm-hmm. Kentucky State Patrol, the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the Bangor, Maine Police Department, they all use social media so unbelievably well to get their stories out. You know, I heard the weather reports, very cold out. Tonight and tomorrow morning, probably a dozen law enforcement officers around St. Louis are going to be helping people that are stranded in cars, changing tires on the side of the road, and they need to brag about that, because that's the stuff that cops do that changes people's lives.
Mm. You see phony documentaries like with the Ferguson and the Michael Brown thing come out, and it gets a lot of people riled up in the way that they try to edit certain pieces of video and omitting the facts of the case. And I mean, there was an extensive investigation into this because of the national attention. What we saw too is, and this really makes me sick, when you see people going out selling merchandise after a police officer is shot and killed. And we saw just recently, people will go online, they'll make t-shirts celebrating that fact. And it's really disgusting, some of these different things that happen on social media. And the discussions are also equally as terrible. One thing you mentioned about, media, this is what I generally find. I find that when there's these local matters, local media, they'll do a much better job trying to keep the coverage fair than the national media will. The national media will come in and they have no respect for any of the nuances of a local community. All they want to do is try to grab people in from that headline, and they want to sensationalize it, and they want to get out there and get it in front of as much people as possible. And that's the main objective, not the truth of the matter.
Yeah, when Blue News, I interviewed a person who was in charge of all the law enforcement operations on the ground in Ferguson. And at one point it was rumored that CNN had 78 full-time employees in Ferguson.
Ugh.
And, you know, when you, as you go higher and higher in that perspective to the national news and the international news organizations, they're in more and more competition with each other. So, you know, I know folks who work for those organizations, and I've done probably 550 media interviews, and they're good people. There's a lot of them that are very, very caring, but they are under an incredible amount of pressure to put out information. And sometimes they don't have anything else to put out, but they've got a deadline coming up. So there's a very famous, when I speak, I actually spoke to the Missouri Sheriff's Association a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. That I bring out, and it's a story about Ferguson. And it's a statement made by two people who absolutely were interviewed. They were put on CNN, and the information they put out had absolutely nothing to do with what happened. But the reason they were put on CNN is nobody from the police department or anyone else was talking to CNN. So they had to tell their story. That's what they were there to do, is tell the story. And without a doubt, we may get mad at them, and sometimes I get frustrated too, but we could not live in a free society without a free press.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, since we're running out of time, we're going to be getting to news here in a moment. If people wanted to check out your books, or maybe even your upcoming book that's coming out in January, where can they find you?
They can go to bluelinelawyer.com. The books are always available at amazon.com and other places. And as I said, with Blue News and When Cops Kill, all the profits support law enforcement charities. But the novel is called Hunting of Men, and the pre-sale on Amazon will be December 20th, and the book will be available and officially launched on January 9th.
Lance LaRusso, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America, spending some time with us here tonight.
Thanks for having me, and have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. I find these whole topics fascinating. It's something that's nonstop here in the city of St. Louis, the way that we discuss these things. If you listen to this past hour, or maybe you missed part of it and you want to go back and hear the full conversation, go to KMOX.com/ONA. We post all of our interviews right there. And better yet, this is what I would encourage you to do. If something that you heard was interesting, go send it to a friend. You know, take the link on social media, and on top of that, email it to them, share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter. It's an easy way for you to get these sort of discussions out there, and I think they are important discussions. Coming up next, I wanted to talk about an instance that happened in a St. Louis County school. Perhaps maybe they're punishing the wrong person. KMOV did a good story about that. We'll get to it next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.